Alrighty. And the name of the message is called Purifying the Land. Purifying the Land. So, depending on how you look at it, we're either going to be talking today about judgment or cleansing. Judgment or cleansing. And I think which word is used depending on what side of it you're on. But I'm going to start in Ezekiel 33, starting in verse 1. It says, "And the word of Yahweh was to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the sons of your people and say to them, When I bring the sword on it, on a land, and take one man from the people of the land, their borders, and set him for a watchman to them, and when he sees the sword coming on the land, and he blows the ram's horn and warns the people, and the hearer hearing the sound of the ram's horn and does not take warning, and the sword comes and takes him, his blood shall be on his own head. He heard the sound of the ram's horn and took no warning, but his blood shall be on himself. But he who took warning, he shall deliver his soul. But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the ram's horn, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes a soul from them, he is taken in his iniquity, but I will require his blood from the watchman's hand. And you, son of man, I gave you as a watchman to the house of Israel. And you shall hear the word from my mouth and warn them from me. When I say to the wicked, O wicked one, surely you shall die, and you do not speak to warn the wicked one from his way, that wicked one shall die in his iniquity, but I will require his blood from your hand. But you, if you warn the wicked one from his way to turn from it, and he does not turn from his way, he shall die in his iniquity, but you have delivered your soul. And you, son of man, say to the house of Israel, This you have spoken, saying, Surely our transgressions and our sins are on us, and we are rotting in them, even then shall we live? And say to them, As I live, declares Adonai Yahweh, I do not have delight in the death of the wicked, except in the wicked turning from his way, and so to live. Turn. Turn from your evil ways, for why will you die, O house of Israel? So here we are in July 2012. We know that we're at the threshold of this. We're at the door of a great cleansing that's coming here on the land. And like I say, whether it's a judgment or a cleansing, I think that's up to Yahweh. I think in the end time we already know. It says, he who is righteous be righteous still, he who is wicked be wicked still. And basically, you know, I've talked about this for at least a year, maybe even longer, that we're in the valley of decision. You know, we're in that valley of decision. And that decision is which way to go. And I don't mean just us or even the people of Yahweh, but particularly the world and Israel. You know, if you go out there today, you talk to any Israeli, no Israeli will tell you that they could ever think that they could lose a war, and they would ever think that they could ever be defeated by their enemies. And what you hear is, we know how to take care of them, we know what to do, and maybe they do. But in the same sense, the Bible gives a very, very different message. And like I said, it's both exciting and nerve-wracking. To be at the place we're at, you know, to be at that threshold, knowing that something is coming here in a very, very short few days or months ahead, and being at the calm before the storm. So I want to go in today and I want to look at this. The first thing I want to do is I want to look at some of the things that's going on here in the land that's bringing this cleansing or judgment on. Then I want to go into the result of some of those things that are happening. And then I want to put it into, how does it relate to us? You know, here we are, not being part of Judaism or Judah, you know, we're just kind of here. You know, there's not many of us. We're like Gideon's army. And how does this relate to us? What are we doing in the middle of all this that Yahweh has this controversy with Judah? And I think we'll see that it'll be very interesting. So let's go to Jeremiah 23. And let's start, first of all, and like I said, you know, you could read these scriptures over and over again. And of course, everything that Yahweh says is true. But when you're living here, I think that they really get magnified in a way that every day in our everyday life, we see some of these things. So they really come out. But Jeremiah 23 and verse 25 says, I have heard what the prophets said, those who prophesy lies in my name, saying, I have dreamed, I have dreamed. How long is this there in the heart of the prophets of lies? Yea, the prophet of the deceit of their own heart. They plot to cause my people to forget my name by their dreams which they tell, each one to his neighbor, even as their fathers have forgotten my name for Baal. And we know the name Lord is the name Baal. The prophets who have a dream, let him tell his dream. And he who has my word, let him speak my word faithfully. So today, this is might be a little longer message because I have a lot of the word of Yahweh to share with you today because it's a very, very important time. We're living in an important message. What does the chaff have to do with the wheat, says Yahweh? So we see even in the end time with the parables of Yeshua and the separating of the wheat and the chaff have to deal with the word of Yahweh compared to the false prophets that are prophesying in their own name. Is it not my word thus like fire, says Yahweh, and like a hammer which breaks a rock in pieces? Therefore, behold, says Yahweh, I am against the prophets who steal my words, each from his neighbor. Yahweh says, behold, I am against the prophets who use their tongues and says, he says. Yahweh says, behold, I am against those who prophesy false dreams and tell them and cause my people to go astray by thy lies and by their foolishness. Yet I do not send them nor command them, and they will not profit this people at all, says Yahweh. And here, definitely, we're talking more than prophets of Judah, because there's not so many prophets of Judah out there today. Although there are some rabbinicals that claim to be prophets, but more the prophets of, in the Christian circles, messianic circles, anywhere you want to look, there are many people out there today, mostly coming from the United States of Babylon, who think they're prophets. There's, you know, all the time somebody will send me a link or a letter or mail it to us in the mail of some guy, you know, whether it's David Wilkerson or somebody else. David Wilkerson is dead now. You know, some Christian person who says that God talked to them and God told them these things that are going to happen. And to me, I'm not too worried what God is saying, the false Babylonian deity from thousands of years ago. But if you look in your Bible, if we just want to look at the facts from Genesis to Revelation, in 66 books of the Bible, you will never see the Creator Yahweh ever talk to any prophet in any other name but his name Yahweh. So it's that simple. Not judging the people that don't know the name Yahweh, you know, because there are people that have good hearts and Yahweh will judge them. That's between him and them. I'm making a simple statement in fact. No matter what prophet you're looking at, whether it's Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, or any other prophet in the Bible, Old Testament or New Testament, there is no other name that the Creator has ever spoke to a prophet of him. Because a prophet is a very rare office, you know. There are not a lot of prophets. And even today, most people in the New Testament are not prophets like Old Testament prophets. The law and the prophets were until John. There are some people in the New Testament that may have the gift of prophecy, which means Yahweh's Spirit has allowed them to interpret what was already written. But there's not prophets. I'm not going to come here and tell you I'm a prophet and give you, there's the book of Don, you know, or the book of whatever. It's not the way it is. The law and the prophets weren't told John. So there's the gift of prophecy. But most of these people that claim to be prophets, that's exactly what they're doing. They're prophesying in a false name, and that's what Yahweh says. They're taking his word, and they're giving falsehoods. They're giving every falsehood in the world. And when you look at some of these nonsense prophecies that a lot of these people said, Yahweh is not too happy with it. So, like I said, there are many false prophets today. It's one of the things Yeshua prophesied to know the end time. You know, that many, there'll be many false prophets and even lying signs and wonders sometimes. But one thing to know, a true prophet of Yahweh, like I said, they will always preach in the name of Yahweh. Luke 19, because today I'm not really want to talk about that. Just wanted to mention it. I want to talk more about the land of Israel and our brother Judah, and why this judgment or purifying is going to be coming on this land in the very short days ahead. Luke 19 and verse 41. And this is when Yeshua came near to Jerusalem. And it says, he drew near, seeing the city, he wept over it, saying, if you had known even you, even at least in this hour of yours, the things for your peace, but now they were hidden from your eyes. But to you will come the days when your enemies will surround you and will oppress you from all sides. And they will overthrow you and your children within you, and they will not leave in you a stone upon another, because you did not know the time of your visitation. They did not know the time of their visitation. Israel does not know the time of their visitation. 2,500 years they were in diaspora. Can you imagine if you were a Jew and after 2,500 years of living all over the world, there's no other people on the face of the earth that have ever been scattered for 2,500 years that are still a people? I don't see anybody claiming to be an Amorite or a Perizzite or a Jebusite, trying to get a piece of land somewhere and start a Jebusite community. It doesn't exist. These people are written in history books. That's all they are. And yet Judah, for 2,500 years, scattered among the nations. And Yahweh's word prophesied it. We have message after message after message on this. That he told exactly to the day of their captivity going in and their captivity coming out. And back here in the days of Yeshua, unfortunately, they didn't know the time of their visitation then. And today they don't know the time of their visitation. 2,500 years later, the promises of Abraham being fulfilled. And unfortunately, it's sad that most Jewish people, most Jewish children growing up, if you talk to them, they have no idea why they're here again. I do believe when Israel became a nation, it was based on the foundation of those promises. And most people back then, including Ben-Gurion and many of the other people, had Bibles out and they saw what was happening. They saw that this was something that was prophetic, that this was something that was unbelievable. But here we are 64 years later. And most of them have no idea. They have no idea what they're doing. Many friends of mine that are Jewish have told me the biggest problem with the nation of Israel today and Jewish people today is they don't know what a Jew is. What is a Jew? You know, what is it? What is a Jew? What does that mean? You know, is it the Black Orthodox with the curls, which is only about 10% of the people here? You know, what is a Jew? You know, you have all different types of people living here. You have more than a million Russians that have migrated to the land now in the last 15 years or so. Many of them are not religious. Many of them don't even keep the kosher laws. You have a mishmash of people all mingled in. And what does it even mean to be a Jew in the day we're living in today? So unfortunately, Israel does not know their time of visitation. They don't understand why they're back here again after 2,500 years. And they don't understand what Yahweh is doing in these end times. And very, very rarely, if ever, will you go out here in the streets and hear them giving glory to Yahweh for what's happening in this land right now. Very, very rarely. Let's go to Exodus 34. And let's see, because we said Yahweh works in the circular, he doesn't work in the linear. Patterns repeat themselves. We're going to see here today some dual prophecies, some things that have happened before, some things that will happen now. And what we're also going to do is we're going to see reasons why Israel was kicked out of the land the first time. And let's see if patterns are repeating themselves. And if Yahweh doesn't change, why would the result be different? You know, they say insanity, the definition of insanity. It's doing the same thing over and over again and thinking you're going to get a different result. You know, it doesn't work that way. You reap what you sow. And if you reap seeds to destruction, if you sow seeds to destruction, you're going to reap seeds to destruction. Exodus 34 and verse 12. Because you would think after 2,500 years of being outside of this land, almost like we see with Ezra and Nehemiah, they were only 70 years out of the land, and when they came back, what happened? 70 years outside this land, they realized this is no game. Yahweh's not joking. If we don't sanctify this land that he's given us, we're going to be out of here, and maybe for good. And that's why they started putting fences around their lives. And that's why they started getting serious about the commandments. That's why they started, and when you read Nehemiah and Ezra, they started to say, hey, this is no joking matter. We need to get serious about this. Exodus 34 and verse 12 tells about, he says, take heed to yourself that you not cut a covenant with the people of the land to which you are going in, that it not be a snare in your midst. But you shall cut down their altars, break their pillars, and you shall cut off their Asherahs. For you shall not bow to another Elohim, for Yahweh, whose name is Jealous, he is Jealous Elohim. Very clearly. Why was Israel a nation in 1948 after 2,520 years? Was it because of the United Nations? Was it because they were such a powerful army? Was it because they got lucky? No. They were a nation after 2,520 years because Yahweh prophesied it. Yahweh prophesied that they would be in captivity exactly 2,520 years. It's in the book of Leviticus 26. And Yahweh prophesied to the day when they would come out. So you would think when they come back to the land, the first thing they would do is, number one, don't make a pact with the people around you. And number two, destroy their standing pillars. Destroy their idols that are in your midst. In 1967, after the Six-Day War, a friend of mine, Gershom Solomon, who is the leader of the Temple Mount Faithful, He was one of the six people who came into the Temple Mount area and took it over, put an Israeli flag on the Temple Mount. Can you imagine? And after maybe about 1 hour of that, the general came and said, now take it down. And they said, what? What are you talking about? He said, if we don't take it down, we're going to start World War III. They didn't trust in Yahweh. Instead of breaking down the Dome of the Rock and all the other pagan shrines and pillars that are in the land, they did the opposite. They allowed it, they looked the other way, and Yahweh was not that happy. Twice Israel was cast out of the land, twice the main reason was paganism, as we're going to see. And coming back here, one of the first things they should have got in their mind is there should not be any pagan shrines over here. You can go right across the lake and you can see totem poles everywhere in Kibbutz Gineso and all kinds of paganism everywhere you look. You don't have to go that far. Leviticus 18 in verse 24. He says, do not defile yourself with these, for with all these the nations have been defiled, which I am casting out before you. And the land is defiled, and I will visit its iniquity on it. And the land is vomiting out those living in it. This is the only land on earth that when it gets the full of sin, Yahweh will vomit the people out of it. Very, very clearly. And you shall keep my statutes and my judgments, and shall not do any of these disgusting acts, neither the native nor the alien who is staying in your midst. For the men of the land who are before you have done all these disgusting things, and the land is defiled. Do not do these, lest the land vomit you out for defiling it, as it is vomit out the nations that were before you. For anyone who does any of these disgusting things, even that person who are doing them, shall be cut off from the midst of their people. And you shall keep my charges not to do any of the disgusting customs which were committed before you. And you shall not defile yourself with them. I am Yahweh Elohim. One of those disgusting customs he talks about is incest. You know, one of the things people think that Yahweh started the world through incest. He didn't. He did not start the world through incest. That was a disgusting, we see it in chapter 18, where we're reading here, earlier on here. You shall not draw near to a close relative of yours, you know, to have relations with them, your sister or whatever. But that's another subject, not for today. If you go back to verse 21 and 22 of the same chapter, it says, you shall not give your seed to pass through to Moloch, nor shall you pollute the name of your Elohim. I am Yahweh. And you shall not lie with male as one lies with a woman. It is detestable. It is detestable. In the world we live in today, it's not detestable. The world we live in today, giving your seed to Moloch, killing your children, the fruit of your womb is called a woman's right to choose. Homosexuality or lesbianism is called a lifestyle choice. So maybe in the nations, they can reap what they sow and do what they want, but not in the land of Yahweh. Not in the land of Yahweh. Do you know that abortion per capita is the highest in Israel than anywhere in the world? Do you know that the IDF pays the government for 2 abortions for every female that's part of the IDF while they're serving there? Homosexuality here is rampant. Parades in Jerusalem and on the streets, openly acceptable, legal to have. Here, not just in Israel, but in Jerusalem, Yahweh set apart city. Wow. And what does Yahweh say? It's disgusting. And they will be vomited out for this. Do they need a cleansing here? Should we be surprised that Yahweh is going to cleanse the land? I don't think so. I don't think we need to be surprised when we look around us what's happening. People barbecuing on Yom Kippur, Sabbath being broken regularly. Matter of fact, now there's a law coming back to the Knesset again. This started when the last Intifada broke out in 2000 to open up malls on Shabbat, to have the buses running, have a regular work day. And they've been moving toward there, but now they're really starting to bring it back. And that is something Yahweh will not put up with. The Shabbat is the set-apart day to him in his land. The Shabbat was not given to the world. It was to set this place here apart from the world. And Yahweh will not allow it to be defiled, or he'll vomit the people out of the land again. So like I say, judgment or cleansing, you decide. Judgment or cleansing, you decide. We know from the book of Zechariah, two-thirds will die in what's coming, and the last third will be purified through fire. Ezekiel 22. Ezekiel 22. And the word of Yahweh was to me, saying, "You son of man, will you judge? Will you judge the bloody city? Then cause her to know all her abominations. Then you shall say, so says Adonai Yahweh, the city sheds blood in her midst, that her time may come. And she makes idols against herself to defile herself. By your blood which you have shed, you are guilty, and by your idols which you have made, you are defiled. And your days have brought near, and you have come to your years. On account of this, I had made you a reproach to the nations and a mocking to all the lands. Those who are near and those who are far from you shall mock against you, a defiled of name, abounding in turmoil. Behold, the rulers of Israel, each man by his might, have been in you in order to pour out blood." The last president of Israel is in prison right now. On three counts of rape, the president. The last prime minister has been on trial. He got exonerated on two counts of corruption. He was guilty on the other one, and he has more trials coming. The prime minister of the country. You know, and you see it, many rabbis that are getting arrested for child abuse and other things that are going on. The leaders, these are supposed to be the leaders of the country, and we're seeing there very much is a gap with the leaders here. Ezekiel 22, verse 23. If you drop down to verse 23 here, same chapter. "And the word of Yahweh was coming to me, saying, Son of man, speak to her. You are a land, she is not being cleansed. You are not rained on in the day of disgust. A plot by her prophets is in her midst, like a roaring lion tearing prey. They have devoured souls, and they have taken the riches and gems. They multiplied her widows in her midst. Her priests have violated my Torah and have profaned my holy things. They have not divided between the holy and the common, and between the unclean and the clean they have not taught. And they have hidden their eyes from the Sabbaths, and I am profaned from among them. Her rulers in her midst are like wolves tearing prey to pour out blood to destroy souls in order to gain unjust gain. And her prophets have smeared themselves with lime, a seer of empty visions and divining lies to them, saying, so says Adonai Yahweh, when Yahweh has not spoken. The people of the land have practiced oppression and practiced robbery, and they troubled the poor and the needy, and they have oppressed the stranger without justice. And I sought among them a man to wall up the wall and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should not destroy it, but I found none." Oh, one of the saddest scriptures. One of the saddest scriptures in the Bible to me. Yahweh looked for one person. Remember with Abraham, back in Genesis 18? If I find 50 men, if I find 45, if I find 40. Here he's looking for one. And he found none. "So I have poured out on them my disgust. With the fire of my wrath I consumed them. I have given their way on their heads," states Adonai Yahweh. Very, very sad situation. But unfortunately very true. Isaiah 1. Isaiah 1, starting in verse 1. "The vision of Isaiah the son of Amos, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Hear, O heavens, and listen, O earth, for Yahweh has spoken. I have enlarged and brought up sons, but they have rebelled against me. The ox knows his owner, and the ass his master's manger. But Israel does not know, my people have not understood." See, even the animals understand the one who's giving them their bread. How many Israelis are giving praise to Yahweh? How many Israelis are saying it's by the hand of Yahweh that we're a nation, it's by the hand of Yahweh we're blessed? "Woe, sinful nation, a people heavy with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, sons who corrupt. They have forsaken Yahweh. They have scorned the Holy One of Israel. They are estranged backward. Why will you be beaten anymore? Will you continue the revolt? The whole head is sick and the whole heart is faint. From the sole of the foot to the head, no soundness is in it. Only a wound and a stripe and a fresh blow. They have not been closed nor bound up, nor was it softened with oil. Your land is a desolation. Your cities burned with fire. Foreigners devour your land before you. And behold, ruin is overthrown by foreigners. And the daughter of Zion is left like a booth in a vineyard, like a hut in a cucumber field, like a besieged city. Except Yahweh of hosts had left a remnant for us, a few, we would have been like Sodom, and we would have been like Gomorrah. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Go down to verse 16. Wash yourself, purify yourself, put away the evil of your doings from my sight. Stop doing evil. Learn to do good, seek justice, make straight the violent one, judge the orphan, contend for the widow. Come now and let us reason together, says Yahweh. He's not unreasonable. He doesn't want them to die. He wants them to simply come to repentance. Though your sins are as scarlet, they shall be white as snow. Though they are red as crimson, they shall be like wool. If you are willing and hear, you shall eat the good of the land. But if you refuse and rebel, you shall be devoured with the sword, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. Judgment or cleansing? Valley of decision for everybody on this earth. Which way are we going to go? Which way are we going to go? It's really interesting that one of the signs that is coming this feast, you know, in the... when the moon is right in between the judgment of the scales, you know, showing the valley of decisions. Valley of decisions. Jeremiah 7. Jeremiah 7, starting in verse 1. Getting a little bit deep now on some of the things recently that have been done here that have been against the word of Yahweh. The word that came to Jeremiah from Yahweh saying, stand in the gate of the house of Yahweh and call out there this word and say, hear the word of Yahweh, O Judah, who enter in at these gates to worship Yahweh. So says Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, amend your ways and your doings, and I will let you dwell in this place. Do not trust yourself to lying words, saying, the temple of Yahweh, the temple of Yahweh, thus is the temple of Yahweh. You've been hearing for a generation, everyone all talking about the temple. And missing, like he said, you strain at the gnat and you swallow a camel. Like Yeshua said, you justify the gold to the altar and don't justify the altar that makes the gold special. What is the purpose of the temple? The purpose of the temple is the sacrifice to draw us closer to Yahweh. So they reject the sacrifice, but they're all looking for the temple. Why do you need a temple if you don't have the sacrifice? And if you have the sacrifice, why do you need a temple? The other way you look. For if you thoroughly amend your ways and your doings, if you truly practice justice between a man and his neighbor, if you do not oppress the stranger, the orphan, and the widow, if you do not pour out innocent blood in this place or walk after other Elohim to your evil, then I will let you dwell in this place, in the land that I gave your fathers from forever and forever. Behold, you trust for yourself in lying words without being of use. Will you steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and burn incense to Baal, and walk after other Elohim, who you do not know? And will you then come and stand before me in this house on which my name is called, and say, we are delivered in order to do all these detestable things? Did Yahweh bring them back for this? Did he bring them back to market people, to bring 4 million tourists here, just to sell them all the baloney and all the idols that they want to sell them with? Is this really the reason why Yahweh brought them back here? Has this house on which my name is called become a den of violent ones in your eyes? Behold, even I have seen, declares Yahweh. But go now to my place which was in Shiloh. We've been there. Where I made my name dwell at first, and see what I did to the evil of my people Israel. Not much to see there anymore, except what was there in the past. And now, because you have done all these things, says Yahweh, and I have spoken to you, rising early and speaking, but you did not hear. Yea, I called, but you did not answer. And I will do to the house which my name is called, on which you are trusting, and to the place which I gave to you and your fathers, as I have done to Shiloh. And I will cast you out from my face, as I cast out all your brothers, the seed of Ephraim. And you do not pray for this people. Do not lift up cry or prayer for them. Do not intercede with me, for I will not hear. Tough time is coming. Very tough time is coming. Drop down to verse 16. Verse 23. But I commanded them this thing, saying, obey my voice, and I will be your Elohim, and you will be my people. Also walk in the ways that I have commanded you, so that it may be well with you. But they did not listen nor bow their ear. But they walked in their own plans in the stubbornness of their evil heart. And they went backward and not forward. Since the day that your fathers came up of the land of Egypt to this day, I have even sent to you all the servants, the prophets, daily rising and sending. Yet they did not listen to me nor bow their ear, but they stiffened their neck. They became more evil than their fathers. And you shall speak all these words to them, but they will not listen to you. And you shall call to them, but they will not answer. But you shall say to them, this is a nation that does not obey the voice of Yahweh the Elohim, nor receive instruction. Truth has perished, it is cut off from their mouth. Cut off your crown and throw it away and lift up a dirge on the heights, for Yahweh has rejected and forsaken the generation of his wrath. For the sons of Judah have done evil in my eyes, says Yahweh. They have set their idols in the house on which is called by my name in order to defile it. And we know that Yahweh, even during the time of the reign of the beast, will even allow Jerusalem to be taken over by Satan for 42 months because of what's happening here. Exactly because of what's happening here. Jeremiah 8 and verse 5. Why has this people Jerusalem turned away from a never-ending apostasy? They hold fast to deceit, they refuse to return. I listened and heard, they did not speak so. No man repented because of this evil, saying, what have I done? Everyone turned in their own course as a horse rushes into the battle. Also the stork in the heavens knows her seasons, and the turtle dove and the swallow and the thrush observe the time of their coming. But my people do not know the judgment of Yahweh. How do you say we are wise and the Torah of Yahweh is with us? Behold, the lying pen of the scribes has certainly worked deceit. You wear tzitzit and not kippah? What is it? The lying pen of the scribes. They don't understand the word of Yahweh. They don't understand what he's saying. The wise are ashamed. They are terrified and captured. Behold, they have rejected the word of Yahweh, and what wisdom is theirs? So I will give their wives to others, their field to those shall inherit. For everyone from the least to the greatest cuts off a prophet. From the prophet to the priest, everyone deals falsely. For they have healed the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. Were they ashamed when they had done hateful things? They were not even at all ashamed, nor did they know how to blush. So they shall fall among those who fall, in the time of their punishment they will wither. And now they start coming into even a greater crime. Going back to 1993... when they had a left-wing liberal government that came in under Menachem Begin, and they signed a peace treaty, like we said in the beginning here in Exodus, do not sign any kind of treaty with other people, and yet they did sign a treaty with the Palestinians. They signed a treaty for peace, and all they got was terror. All they got was terror that came from there. If we look in verse 15, you'll see, we looked for peace, but no good came from a time of healing. But behold, terror. Jeremiah 14:19. Have you completely rejected Judah? Or has your soul hated Zion? Why have you stricken us and there is no healing for us? We waited for peace, but nothing good came. And for a time of healing, but behold, terror. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. So here it is, 7 years of Oslo. It was a 7-year agreement. It ended in 2000. How did it end? Did it end with peace? Did it end with world peace? No. It ended with the beginning of the second Intifada that took the lives of hundreds of Israelis, thousands of Palestinians, and chaos in this land the last 12 years. And yet they still haven't learned the lessons. How important is it? You got an election coming up next year, maybe sooner. You know, a very unstable government right now. It could fall at any time. But I'll tell you right now, if this government falls and you get a left-wing coalition coming in there, within a matter of months, they will give away everything to the Palestinians. They'll sign any kind of peace deal, and that'll be the end of it, as we'll see here. That'll be the last nail in the coffin. They haven't learned from their mistakes. They haven't seen that this is not their land to give. And they haven't seen that only that came out of trying to make peace with a terrorist organization has only brought nothing but terror to them. And yet they still haven't learned. Joel 2, verse 15. It says, blow a shofar, a ram's horn in Zion, sanctify a fast, call a solemn assembly. Gather the people, sanctify the congregation. Gather the elders, gather the children and those who suck the breast. Let the bridegroom go out of his room and the bridegroom out of her bridal chamber. We are getting ready for this time. Yahweh is starting to prepare the bride as the bridegroom is getting ready to come out of his chamber. Let the priests, the ministers of Yahweh, weep between the porch and the altar. Let them say, have pity on your people, Yahweh, and do not give your inheritance to shame. For a proverb among those of the nations, why should they say among the people, where is their Elohim? And then Yahweh will be jealous for his land and have pity on his people. Everything in the end time is about Yahweh's redemption of his covenant, the people, the land, and the Torah. Joel 3:1-2. For behold, in those days and at that time, when I bring again the exiles of Judah and Jerusalem, here we are, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, the valley of decision. And I will enter into judgment with them there, for my people and my inheritance, Israel, whom they've scattered among the nations, and they divided my land. It is the last nail in the coffin, is bringing the land of Israel. The last nail in the coffin. If you look at Revelation 6, Revelation 6 chapter, they have been watering down the people the last 20 years. Two-state solution is the only possibility. As a matter of fact, the two-state solution is the only unpossibility. It could never work. You got a tiny little land that people everywhere, villages all over the place. It's impossible. It is so ridiculously impossible, you wonder whoever came up with it. But they're doing it because they're trying to thwart the plan of Yahweh. And Israel should be more worried about making an ally with their brother Ephraim than trying to make a peace deal with a terrorist group of Palestinians. And let's look what happens when they do. Revelation 6. And I saw when the Lamb opened of the seals, I heard one of the four living creatures like the sound of thunder saying, come and see. And behold, I saw a white horse. And the one sitting on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him. And he went out overcoming that he might overcome. Heard he said, false peace coming. And when he opened the second seal, I heard the living creature saying, come and see. And another horse went out red and given to the one sitting it to take peace from the earth, and they should slay one another. So from the false peace would comes war. And when he opened the third seal, I heard the living creature say, come and see. And it was a black horse, and having a balance in the hand, and I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, a measure of wheat for a denarius and three measures of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil of the wine. So we see famine is going to come from this. Interesting enough, over the last week, there have been major crop problems in the United States. They're calling it the worst national disaster in the history of the United States of America with the corn and the wheat over there. And then verse 6, I heard a voice in the... verse 7, and he opened the fourth seal, and I heard a voice of the four living creatures saying, come and see, and behold, a pale green horse, and the name on it was Death. The name on it was Death. So what happens here from Joel 3, 1 and 2? We see that the making of a Palestinian state, the dividing of the land, is what is bringing Yahweh's wrath. And that wrath goes into the four horsemen of the apocalypse, white, red, black, and green. What is the typifies a nation? Being a nation is a flag. You only have a flag if you are a nation. And interesting enough, those very four colors are the exact flag of the Palestinians. I don't think that's by coincidence. So let's look a little bit more into this. Jeremiah 51. Who is a big culprit on forcing this peace that's bringing this judgment and cleansing? Jeremiah 51, verse 35. The violence done to me and to my flesh is on Babylon, the one living in Zion shall say. And Jerusalem shall say, my blood will be on those living in Chaldea. Drop down to verse 49. As Babylon is to fall for the slain of Israel. So because Babylon is forcing this judgment coming on Israel, Babylon is going to get it next. As Babylon is to fall for the slain of Israel, so for Babylon, the slain of all the earths will fall. Babylon falls, and all of a sudden you're going to have world war and the whole end time scenario coming out. You who have escaped the sword, go away, do not stand still. Remember Yahweh afar off and left Jerusalem, come into your mind. We know at this time when this chaos happens, people will be trying to come back to the land, and many other things will be happening. But clearly, Babylon is the cause of the fall of Jerusalem, which shows you they can't be the same thing. One is causing the other one to fall. Jeremiah 25. If you go back some scriptures, we'll see this. Jeremiah 25, in verse 11. And this whole land shall be a waste and a horror, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. 70 year is very interesting when you're looking at, you know, that Jerusalem is given 70 years, you know, before Yahweh comes out. They're being tortured over here before Yahweh comes out and does something. And Babylon is given 70 years to rule the nations before they fall. And it shall be when 70 years are fulfilled, I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation in the land of the Chaldeans for their iniquity, says Yahweh, and I will make it everlasting ruins. And I will bring on that land all my words which I have spoken against it, all that is written in the book which Jeremiah has prophesied against all the nations. For many nations and great kings will lay service on them, even they, and I will repay them according to their deeds and according to the work of their hand. For so says Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, to me, take the wine of the cup of the wrath from my hand and cause all the nations to whom I shall send you the drink. So Yahweh says in Zechariah, he was a little bit angry with the nations. Look around the world. He can't be too happy what's going on. But they gave him more reason to be angry when they came here. So Yahweh, he has a time when he's going to judge the nations. Right now he's working on Israel. He's bringing them back. He has a plan. But now the nations, like it says in Psalm 2, have decided they're going to thwart the plan of Yahweh. And they are going to come here and they are going to stop it. And that is forcing Yahweh's hand to bring. And now he's saying, now you force my hand. Just like he says, like a hunter going out to get them, like a fisher. Now I will cause it to come all over the world. Take the cup of my wrath from my hand and cause all the nations to drink whom I tell you. And they shall drink and reel to and fro and be maddened because of the sword that I will send among them. Then I took the cup from Yahweh's hand and made all the nations to drink those whom Yahweh had sent me. And he's going to tell us exactly who they are. Jerusalem and the cities of Judah. Like I said, it's coming here first. And their kings and their rulers to make them a ruin, a horror, and a hissing, and a curse, as it is to this day. Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So we see what's going on there. Maybe a couple years ago we would wonder, how can that happen? They got a peace deal. Mubarak is, but now it's, 2 years later, totally different situation. Muslim Brotherhood there, aligning themselves with Hamas, and things are changing very quickly. And his rulers and people, and all the mixed people of the kings of the land of Uz, Jordan, and all the kings of the land of the Philistines, the Palestinians, Ashkelon and Gaza, Ekron, and the remnant of Ashdod, Edom and Moab and the sons of Ammon, and all the kings of Tyre, Lebanon, and all the kings of Sidon, Lebanon, and the coastal kings beyond the sea, probably talking about Cyprus and Turkey, Dedan, Tema, and Buz, Saudi Arabia and Afghanistan, and all will cut the corners of their beards, and all the kings of Arabia, and all the kings of the mixed people who dwell in the desert, and all the kings of Zimri, and the kings of Elam, Iran, and all the kings of Media, and all the kings of the north and far, Ukraine, Russia, Georgia, each one to his brother, and the kingdoms of the world which are on the face of the earth, and the kings of Shishak, Iraq, shall drink after them. Pretty interesting. All this that's going around the Arab Spring are all mentioned here. They're all part of it, and we're already seeing this rabble that Yahweh is going to cause them. Now what happens after that? So you shall say to them, says Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, drink and be drunk and vomit and fall and do not rise up because of the sword which I will send among you. And it will be if they refuse to take the cup from your hand to drink, then you shall say to them, so says Yahweh of hosts, surely you will drink. For behold, I begin to bring evil on the city which is called by my name. And shall you be found entirely without guilt? You shall not be without guilt, for I will call for a sword on all those living in the earth, says Yahweh of hosts. And now you prophesy against them all these words and say to them, Yahweh shall roar from on high and give forth his voice from his holy habitation. He shall mightily roar over his dwelling place. He answers with a shout like those who tread out the grapes against all those living in the earth. A roaring will go to the ends of the earth, for Yahweh has a controversy with the nations. He will enter into judgment with all flesh. He will give the wicked to the sword, says Yahweh. So says Yahweh of hosts, behold, evil is going from nation to nation, and a great whirlwind shall be stirred up from the corners of the earth. And the slain of Yahweh shall be in that day from one end of the earth even to the other end of the earth. They shall not be mourned, nor gathered, nor buried. They shall be as dung on the face of the earth. Clearly end time. This has never happened before. Clearly we see this judgment is an end time judgment. Zechariah 12, 2 and 3. It says, behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling to all the people around, and it shall also be against Judah in the siege against Jerusalem. In that day I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the people. All who lift it shall be cut in pieces, and all the nations on earth shall be gathered against it. And interesting enough, when you look at end time Babylon, Babylon is the center of the world economy. It's got freshwater seaports, it's doing all the trading, When Babylon falls, all the merchants are crying. Why? Because nobody's buying their merchandise. They're the number one importer. Where Jerusalem is the exact opposite. You know, to think in Zechariah that it says Jerusalem will be a heavy stone for all nations. Why? Jerusalem doesn't produce oil. Jerusalem produces nothing. They're not an exporter of absolutely anything. So why would Jerusalem be the stumbling stone to all nations? Because it goes back to the Garden of Eden. Because Jerusalem is where Yahweh started his plan. Jerusalem is where Satan tried to thwart his plan. Jerusalem is where Yahweh will finish his plan. And it's where Satan will try to thwart it in the end time. So Jerusalem is a stumbling block, and we see it today. Many people around the world feel that way. That it is Jerusalem, the status of Jerusalem, that is holding up world peace, and it will bring world war as we see it. Luke 21 in verse 20. He says, "Then let those in Judea flee into the mountains, and let those in its midst go out, and those in the villages not go near her." When these things happen, we're not going to Jerusalem, we're going to be going away from Jerusalem. "For these are days of vengeance, when all things that have been written are to be fulfilled. But woe to the pregnant women and the ones nursing in those days, for great distress will be on the earth and wrath on this people." Talking about the Jewish people. "And they will fall by the mouth of the sword, and they will be held captive to all nations. And Jerusalem will be trodden down by nations until the times of the nations are fulfilled. And there will be signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars, and on the earth will be anxiety of nations with bewilderment, roaring of sea and surf." Already seeing that tsunamis, anxiety, people being so not knowing what's coming next. As far as the signs in the heaven, that will go for another day. But we are getting a lot of interesting things with that we're starting to see. But the beast power will take Jerusalem as its headquarters for 42 months. What's going to happen during this time? Amos 8. Amos 8 in verse 7. "Yahweh has sworn by the priest of Jacob, surely I will not ever forget all their works. Shall not the land tremble for this, and all who dwell in it mourn? And all of it shall go up like the light, and it shall overflow and sink like the Nile of Egypt. And it shall be in that day, declares Adonai Yahweh, that I will cause the sun to go down at noon, and I will darken the earth in the light of day." You know, is it a eclipse? Possibly. "And I will turn your feast to mourning, and all your songs into a dirge. And I will bring up sackcloth on all loins, and baldness on every head. And I will make it like the mourning for an only one, and the end shall be like a bitter day." Possibly nuclear weapon. "Behold, the days are coming, declares Yahweh Adonai, that I will send a famine into the land, not a famine for bread or thirst or water, but a famine for hearing of the words of Yahweh. And they shall stagger from sea to sea and from north even to east, and they shall roam about to seek the word of Yahweh, and they shall not find it." So we see when this happens, when this war comes, you know, when the nations of the world are going to come and take over Jerusalem, that the work of Yahweh here will stop. That's why I feel an extreme sense of urgency in these days, because we're at the threshold. And only Yahweh knows how much time. He knows if it's days, weeks, months, or years. I don't know. But we know one thing. We are getting extremely close to this time. But there will be a time where the work of Yahweh will stop at this point. Jeremiah 30. Go back to Jeremiah 30. Starting in verse 1. "And then he will start the redemption of not just Judah, but also Ephraim." It says, "The word that came to Jeremiah from Yahweh, saying, so speaks Yahweh Elohim of Israel, writing, saying, write for yourself all the words they have spoken to you in the book. For lo, the days come, says Yahweh, that I will turn the captivity of my people Israel and Judah, says Yahweh, and I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it." Isaiah 11 and verse 11 through 13 says that he will take his hand the second time to call the people back. So what we're seeing from Joel, and we're seeing what we just read in Luke, this is not going to be a little war. This is going to be a war where some Jewish people are even going to go back into captivity again. And it's only after that you'll see Ephraim and Judah coming back out. "And these are the words that Yahweh spoke concerning Israel and concerning Judah. For so says Yahweh, we have heard a sound of trembling and dread, and not of peace. Ask now and see whether a male is giving birth. Why do I see every man with his hands on his loins like a woman giving birth? And all faces are turned to paleness. Alas, for that day is great, there is none like it. And it shall be a time of Jacob's trouble, but he will be saved out of it. We're getting ready to enter Jacob's trouble. We're getting ready for that time. And it's not Judah's trouble, it's Jacob's trouble. It will be on the tribes of Israel, and it will be on the tribe of Judah. For it shall be in that day, says Yahweh of hosts, I will break his yoke from your neck, and I will burst your bonds, and strangers will not enslave him again. But they shall serve Yahweh their Elohim, and David their king, whom I will raise up to them. And you, O my servant Jacob, do not fear, says Yahweh. Do not be terrified, O Israel. For lo, I will save you from afar, and your seed from the land of their captivity. And Jacob shall return and have quiet and be untroubled, and no one will make him afraid. For I am with you, says Yahweh, to save you. Though I make a full end among all nations where I have scattered you, we just read about it, yet I will not make a full end with you, but I will correct you justly, and I will not leave you unpunished. For so says Yahweh, your break cannot be cured, your wound is grievance. There is no one to judge your cause, for your ulcer there are no healing medicines for you. All those loving you have forgotten you. They do not seek you. Who's looking after Ephraim? You know, nobody. They do not seek you, for I have wounded you with the wound of an enemy, with the chastisement of a cruel one, because of the greatness of your iniquity, your sins of many. Why do you cry out over your crushing? Your pain is incurable. For the greatness of your iniquity, your sins are many, so I have done these things to you. Therefore all those who devour you shall be devoured, and all your foes, every one of them, shall go into captivity. And those plundering you I will give up to plunder, and all preying on you I will give up to prey. For I will give health back to you, and I will heal you of your wounds, says Yahweh, because they call you outcast, saying, this is Zion, no one is seeking her. So again, although it's going to be bad, although there's going to be a great judgment and cleansing, in the end, Yahweh is still Yahweh. His plan is still his plan, and there's still a remnant that will survive through this. Verse 22, he says, and you shall be my people, and I will be your Elohim. Behold, the tempest of Yahweh, fury goes forth, a sweeping whirlwind. It shall whirl on the head of the wicked. The glow of Yahweh's anger will not turn back until he has executed, and until he has established the purposes of his heart. In latter days, you will understand it. And here we are. We're living it, so we're understanding. We're understanding why it has to happen. We're understanding what will happen. We're seeing the ramifications of it. But we can't lose heart from it. We can't lose our focus from it, because it's going to happen. There's no doubt it's going to happen. And in the end, it's going to be a good thing, because Yahweh will purify the land, and he will take all this wickedness out of here. And then he will start to bring back the true remnant that he's been preparing for his kingdom to come. Jeremiah 31 and verse 1, at that time, says Yahweh, I will be the Elohim of all the families of Israel, and they will be my people. So we see the second coming back, the second remnant that will be returning after this war will not just be Judah, but also the tribes with him. Isaiah 4 and verse 3, says, and it shall be he remaining in Zion, and he who is left in Jerusalem shall be called holy, and everyone who is written among the living in Jerusalem. This is after the purifying. When Yahweh shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and the blood of Jerusalem shall have been rinsed away from its midst by a spirit of judgment and a spirit of burning. Then Yahweh will create a cloud and smoke by day, and the shining of a flaming fire by night over all the sight of Mount Zion and over her assemblies. For over all the glory will be a canopy, and there shall be a booth for a shade from the heat, and for a refuge and a hiding place from the storm and the rain. Just like we saw in the wilderness. So after this cleansing, where the beast power is going to come and they're going to think it's the millennium, we're going to know it's just the beginning. But now Yahweh's hand and Yahweh's power is going to be there with his people during this time. Romans 9 talks about the same time, this cleansing that's coming. Because again, you might have a billion Israelites out there in the world. They're not all coming back here. A very small remnant will be coming among them. Romans 9 and verse 22. But if Yahweh, desiring to demonstrate his wrath and to make his power known, endured in much long-suffering vessels of wrath, having been fitted out for destruction, but he poured out his mercy on the vessels of favor, which before he prepared for the glory of Elohim, whom he also called not only us of Jews, but also of the nations. As also he says in Hosea, I will call those not my people, my people, and those not beloved, beloved. Those are talking about Ephraimites. So like we said, this second round is not just going to be of Jews, but also of the Ephraimites. And it shall be in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, there will be called sons of the living Elohim. But Isaiah cries on behalf of Israel, if the number of the sons of Israel be as the sand of the sea, only a remnant will be saved. So like I said, many, many, hundreds of millions, a billion Israelites out there, but a very small remnant coming back. For he is bringing the matter to an end, and having been cut short in righteousness, because Yahweh will do a thing cut short on the earth. And as Isaiah has said before, if Yahweh had hosts has not shown favor to us with a remnant, we would have been like Sodom and we would have been like Gomorrah. It says the same thing in Matthew 24. Unless those days are shortened, no flesh would make it. It's not going to be something that's going to go on for decades and decades and decades. It's something that will be a very quick thing, just a few years, and it will all be over. So, the next question I want to ask now. We understand what's coming. We understand why. I don't think any of us doubt it. We live here. We see it. It is a very sobering thing to think of many people that are living here today being completely wiped out and what's coming. But I think the bigger question to us is, because we're not part of them. We're just here, you know? What are we doing here? Do we want to be part of that remnant? You know, do we want to be part of that remnant? And if we do, we must put our heart, our mind, our soul, and strength into what Yahweh is doing in this end time. We're not just sitting here in these chairs by accident. You know, Yahweh hasn't called us as he goes before the flock just for the sake of coming here and, you know, having fun and barbecues, you know, and eating good food, although there's nothing wrong with it. But he's called us here. He's called us here to prepare for this. I mean, we are on the threshold of some of the worst time the world will ever know, and there will be mass chaos, believe me. And people aren't going to know what's going on, but we know what's going on. And we're going to have to be prepared in those days. We're going to have to be prepared, like it says in Daniel 11, that the people who know their Elohim will work and do exploits. They will be working and doing exploits. Matthew 5:35 talks about Jerusalem being the city of the great king. You know, do we stand up for that? I know we do. And that's why every feast we go to Jerusalem. Because it's the city of the great king. And we're going there to proclaim that. We're going there as messengers of Yeshua. Because although Yahweh is supreme over all, Yahweh allowed Jerusalem to be set apart as the city of the great king. And people may think, what does it matter if I believe in Yeshua, right? We still got Yahweh. No. The Bible's very clear. You don't have the Father, you don't have the Son. And the other way around. The spirit of anti-Messiah is the one who doesn't have the Father and the Son. And part of what's going to happen to Judah, praise Yahweh, and this is some of the amazing signs that are going to happen at this feast, is that Judah's eyes will be open. And Judah will also have the Son as well as the Father. They're going to need him in the end times. Because he's not just the Messiah of 11 tribes, he's the Messiah of 12 tribes. And Judah is his tribe. He is the Lion of Judah. So believe me, Yeshua, more than anybody, wants Judah's eyes to be open to what's coming. So it's the city of the great king. Deuteronomy 16:16. Deuteronomy 16:16 says, three times in a year shall all your males appear before Yahweh Elohim in the place which he shall choose, Jerusalem, in the feast of unleavened bread, the feast of weeks, and the feast of tabernacles, and they shall not appear before Yahweh empty. We know we bring our holy day offerings, but also we bring an offering made by fire, meaningly we bring something of ourselves or of our gifts that we use at Sukkot. It's not simply about bringing money, although that is a part of it. So, why? Why is it? Because we need to go there and we need to. We need to hold that city down during those feast times. Because, wow, when you go to Jerusalem today, you don't see a real big remnant of Yahweh being there. You see that Satan is already setting up to take that as his headquarters for those 42 months. But as long as Yahweh allows us to be there, as long as he keeps that door open. And I say it's the greatest honor in the world for any of the brethren that are coming in from the four corners of the earth to be in Jerusalem at feast time. To represent Yahweh there. To be his ambassador during that time. And you don't choose it. Believe me, I'm doing this for more than 10 years. And people that have planned to be there at that feast never get there. And other people who never planned to be there at the last minute, Yahweh has them there. Yahweh is choosing. And that's why all I say is, when the feast opens up and we're doing that opening prayer, if you're sitting in that seat and Yahweh has accounted you worthy to represent him that feast, don't take it light. Don't take it light, because it's something that is there that we are to proclaim the honor of it. Because one of the things we know what's coming is, we know part of Yahweh allowing Satan Jerusalem for 42 months and rejecting Jerusalem for those 42 months is that Jerusalem rejects his son, the Messiah. And we're already seeing that today. We're seeing many messianics here in the land denying Yeshua. It's not a small thing. And there's not, it's not like there's millions of messianics here. And yet there's a fair amount of them that are already rejecting Messiah. Psalm 137. And it's another sign that we're getting close to that day. Psalm 137 and verse 4. He says, "How shall we sing the song of Yahweh on a foreign soil? You know, by the rivers of Babylon we sat and wept. There we remembered Zion." Verse 5. "If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget." Who is the right hand of Yahweh? Did a message on this at the feast last year. Yeshua is the right hand of Yahweh. "If I forget the right hand of Yahweh, let my tongue cleave to my palate. If I do not remember you, if I do not bring up Jerusalem above the head of my joy." And basically when the people here in the land, the messianics, forget the right hand of Yahweh and deny Him, then Yahweh will forget Jerusalem during that time. And it will be given over to the beast for 42 months. Praise Yahweh, it's only a short time. And that is the time we won't be meeting there anymore. We will not be having feasts there anymore. We don't know. We don't know if this is our last feast. We don't know if it's how many years. We don't know. That's the times are in Yahweh's hands. But because of the signs that He's showing us, we know there's not a lot of time left to this famine of the word. And clearly we read it. During those times, those in Judea flee to the mountains. So while we have the time, we have to. We have to stand up as ambassadors for Yeshua, proclaim that city is His during that time. Exodus 34. In verse 23, Exodus 34, in verse 23 says, "Three times in the year every male of yours shall be seen before the face of Yahweh Adonai." The Elohim of Israel. "For I will expel nations from before your face, and I will make broad your territory. And no one shall covet your land as you go up to appear before Yahweh your Elohim three times in the year." So do you have to worry that when you go up to the feast, you're going to come back and your apartment is gone? No, that's His promise. That if we go up and we're faithful to His word, that nobody will covet our land while we're up there. Yahweh will protect us. Israel does not know their time of visitation. Do you know yours? Do you know yours? Do you know why you're sitting here in this chair? Do you know why Yahweh has chosen you to be here? Do you know your responsibility? Because we see, by Israel not knowing their time of visitation, they lost out. They lost out the first time Yeshua came, and many of them will lose out on this time. It's so important. We have to know the time of our visitation here. Luke 10, verse 23. Luke 10 and verse 23. He says, "And having turned to the disciples alone, He said, 'Blessed are the eyes seeing what you see. For I say to you that many prophets and kings desired to see what you see and did not see, and to hear what you hear and did not hear.'" Throughout the years, how many apostles, prophets, people of Yahweh that read the scriptures over and over and over again would have cherished in these last days to be here and be part of this, of what Yahweh's doing in the end time. I could tell you firsthand, from traveling all around the world to our brethren, you wouldn't believe that most of the brethren, 99% of them, would give their right arm to be here in Israel. They would give anything just to visit, never mind to be able to stay here and be part of what Yahweh's doing here. I mean, would give anything. And that's why, for the last 4 years, how hard I've been trying to get some of the people here from Sudan and Ethiopia. You know, like I said a couple of years ago, the one man put his application in. Scraped up $199. That's more than the person would ever have in their life. And he couldn't get his visa. And right after that, his family was murdered. They came through the village. They murdered them. They burned down their house. They had absolutely nothing. And I said, "I better send you that money back. You need it." He said, "No, you keep that money. Because the day will come that I will come to Jerusalem." He cared more about making sure he had his spot set, if ever in the future that Yahweh would open that door, than getting that money back for food and essentials that they needed at that time. Kings and prophets desired what we have here. But Yahweh's chosen us. Right, wrong, indifferent, it doesn't make a difference. The thing is, we're here. And the key is being faithful. The key is now performing what He wants us to perform. And preparing for what He has coming. Leviticus 26. Leviticus 26 in verse 38. He says, "And you shall perish among the nations, and the land of your enemies shall devour you. And those of you who are left, they shall melt away in their iniquity in the lands of their enemies, and also the iniquities of their fathers, they shall dwindle away. And if they confess their iniquity, and the iniquity of their fathers, and the trespass which they have trespassed against me, and also that they have walked contrary to me, that I have walked contrary to them, and have brought them into the land of their enemies, if their uncircumcised hearts are then humbled, and they are pleased to pay for their iniquity, then I will remember my covenant with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac, and I will remember my covenant with Abraham, and I will remember the land." I'll remember the land. So it will take this purifying to wake the people up. Unfortunately, some going into diaspora, into other nations. But Yahweh will remember. A big part of His end time, a big part of the redemption, the end time, is this very land. It's Yahweh claiming it again for Himself, and it's Yahweh redeeming His people from the world and bringing them back here. 1 Peter 4 and verse 17. 1 Peter 4 and verse 17 says, "Because the time has come that judgment must begin with the house of Yahweh. And if it first begins with us, what will be the end of the ones disobeying the good news of Elohim?" Wow, that's a scary scripture. You know, I mean, you're 7.4 billion people on the earth today. And by the time Yeshua's feet go on that Mount of Olives, there ain't many left. And yet judgment begins with the house of Yahweh. Yahweh's got to purify us first if we're going to be part of this process of helping others in the future. And that's why now is the time. Judgment starts at the house of Yahweh. Now is the time for us to prepare ourselves. Now is the time to start preparing ourselves for the kingdom of Yahweh, for Yeshua coming, for the things we need to do. Ephesians 5 and verse 14. Ephesians 5 and verse 14 says, "Because of this," He says, "arise, sleeping ones, and rise from the dead. And rise from the dead ones. And Messiah will give you light. Then watch how carefully you walk, not as unwise, but as wise ones, redeeming the time, for the days are evil. For this reason, do not be foolish, but understanding what the will of Elohim is." So it's a sobering time. We're living in the end. Like I said, not that we can't have fun, and we can't have good meals, and we can't have barbecues, and nice things together. I think that's part of the nurturing process. But we can never forget the times we're living in. It's the time for redeeming the time. Because in the world we're living in, people are wasting the time. You know? People will be running to and fro, and they'll be marrying and giving in marriage right up to the end. Because they're not preparing themselves for the kingdom of Yahweh. And unfortunately, the bridegroom is getting ready to come out of his chamber. And the bride is not getting herself ready either, at least part of it. And we know it. We know in Matthew 22, the wedding supper comes. The invitations go out. And what do people start to say? "Hey, I got this to do. I just bought an ox. I got a field." The same as we're seeing today. People are making excuses. And what does He say? "Go in the highways and the byways and call in good and evil into my supper. My house shall be filled." My house shall be filled. The same way that the earth rotates, you know, around its axis, is the same way that we've seen a rotation from many true believers being in Western society now, in the last decade, the opposite. Now you go in Western society, it's very hard. Not that there's no true believers, but it's hard to find them. And where do you find them more? You find them more now in the Eastern Hemisphere. You're seeing people by the hundreds and even the thousands coming to faith and coming alive. But it's time to redeem the times. It's time to make the most, to be praying every day, to be studying, to be fasting often, meditating on the things that are coming, so that when they come, we're not just in fear, wondering, what do we do now? We know what to do. The Bible tells us what to do. Daniel 12, in verse 9 and 10, says, "And he said, 'Go, Daniel, for the words are sealed and closed up until the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly. And not one of the wicked shall discern, but the wise shall discern. Tell Daniel, go your way, for the words are sealed to the time of the end. The words are not sealed anymore. We're in the end time. And the book of Daniel is opened up in many different ways that no other generation has understood, including the Star of Bethlehem. They couldn't understand it because they didn't have the technology to. And yet today we understand exactly, and we understand the signs to look for because Yahweh already gave us those signs. So the words are not sealed any longer. The question is, are you a wise one or a foolish one? Because it says the wise will understand, but the wicked will not understand. So the last parable I'd like to end on is Matthew 25. Matthew 25, starting in verse 1. It says, "Then the kingdom of heaven shall be compared to 10 virgins who, taking their lamps, went out to the meeting of the bridegroom and the bride. And 5 of them were wise and 5 foolish. Those being foolish, taking their lamps, did not take oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels and their lamps. But the bridegroom delaying, all nodded and slept. And at midnight a cry occurred, 'Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go out to meet him.' Then all those virgins were aroused and prepared their lamps. But the foolish said to the wise, 'Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are gone out.' But the wise answered, saying, 'No, lest there not be enough for us and you. Rather you go and go to those who sell and buy for yourself.' But they going away to buy, the bridegroom came. And those ready went in with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. And afterwards the rest of the virgins came, saying, 'Master, Master, open to us.' But answering, he said, 'Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Therefore be alert, for you do not know the day or the hour in which the Son of Man comes.'" You know, you read this and it's really sad, but what we see today in the Laodicean era, it's the same thing. They're rich and increased with goods and need of nothing. They're thinking that they have everything, when in actuality they have nothing. And there's really no reason to be one of these foolish virgins. There's just no reason. I mean, Yahweh has given us His Word. He's given us His Spirit. We see everything that's happening. He tells us beforehand, "I'll give you signs to show you what's coming." He gives us the signs. All we have to do is believe it. All we have to do is believe it. And like I've said it for years since we've come out of America, that this time period now is a bridge. You need a bridge from Babylon to the kingdom of Yahweh. You can't go from just having that worldly mindset of Babylon into the kingdom. It's impossible. And for me, I am thankful for Yahweh every day and every month and every year that I've had outside to prepare for that, because I know I'm still not prepared. And yet so many people that are just hanging there thinking in the last minute they're going to jump and they're going to make it, and it ain't going to work that way. We see it from this parable. We see from so many parables that unless you are keeping your oil filled, which is the Holy Spirit, unless you are praying, studying, meditating, fasting, and overcoming, you risk losing out on Yahweh's kingdom. And here we are. I mean, we've come so far. We've been handpicked. Many are called, few are chosen. And like I said, how do you know you're chosen? You're there. I didn't do it. I don't know why, but I'm here. And all I know is if I'm here, I want to perform to the best of my ability. I want to know what my talents are that were given by Him, because I want to use those talents to bear fruit, because that's the reason He created me. To bear fruit and multiply and fill the land. And it's up to Yahweh, you know. One man plants, one man waters, but Yahweh gives the increase. But at least, you know, from a personal standpoint, being here 12, 13 years, we see some of that fruition coming about. You know, we see now this year more brethren coming to stay. And I know there's going to be rough days ahead, but I know in the long run that through the cleansing that's coming, it's going to open up for many, many more people that Yahweh will bring, but all in His timing. So, the purifying of the land, is it a judgment or is it a cleansing? I think it's both. I think it's both. And like I said, unfortunately, in the days of Yeshua, Judah did not know the time of their visitation. And unfortunately, they don't know it today. But fortunately, we do know. We do know the time of our visitation. And my prayer to Yahweh is just that every true believer here and around the world will take it serious and prepare. Because like I said, time is going so fast now. And Yahweh is doing something, like he said, that if he told us, we wouldn't believe it. And he gives us the great opportunity to be part of it in these end times. So Yahweh bless. Shabbat shalom.